Once I realized that the Nobel Prize winner was just like the astronaut, who was just like the Olympian, that's when I realized that success can be learned. But again, we've never been taught how to do it. So you're right. You know, we're told what to do all the time. That's not a problem. You can Google that. You can go on YouTube, whatever. But being told what to do and being told how to do it are two completely different things.
So true.
And that's so when true. I realized there was really a gap. So, for example, one of the first element is to tap into your intrinsic motivation. That's what comes from within, right? That's the reason you were put on this earth, the reason you can't wait to get out of bed to start working on it, the reason you can't quiet your mind at night. It's not for the awards, rewards, bonuses, promotions. That's extrinsic motivation. And when you do extrinsic motivation, that's really hard to maintain because that's when other people are judging you. Mm. But when you're doing it for yourself, that motivation comes from within. So great, I told you that you need to tap into your intrinsic motivation. The question is how? How do you do it, right? So that's one of the things in the book, The Success Factor, is I teach people how to tap into their intrinsic motivation. And anyone who's listening, you can do that first step now. It's with something that I call a passion audit, which is a 3-column exercise that I put together in order to really, it asks you these questions to get you to think about what it is that you really enjoy doing versus what you're good at. Those are not the same things.
So
your listeners really want to tap into that and start doing that passion audit, they can just go on my website, ruthgotian.com/passion audit. But I want to tell you one thing. The passion audit, you should be doing that every time you have a transition in your life. A new job, a new partner, a new child, a new home, a pandemic. Because what we have learned and we have seen amplified during the COVID pandemic is that when we have these transitions in our lives, our focus and our passions change. We are not the same at 40 that we were at 20. Our passions have changed, so we need to pivot with that. And that's why the passion audit is such an incredible tool.
That's super fascinating because I often wonder if there is a time in someone's life before they've reached your work, whether they're able to see a glimpse into themselves to understand if they have a handle on what that intrinsic motivation actually might be. Because the people that you see who have got a very strong grasp of that often seem to be leading their best life, right? They're very well in tune with what's going on. There are obviously three other factors we'll get to, but the foundation, the base for what they're doing and why they're doing it is very, very clear to them. And it feels like it's almost a point of envy for others. How did you get to that thing? Because I want that thing.
Yes.
So I'm just curious, you know, taking the audit between all those different points, I get that. Is there an average time or age where you found that some, like these people have gone, you know what, I think I realized this when I was 33 or I was 12 or I hit 60 and I finally got it. Like, is there some sort of commonality around that or not?
You're talking to someone who went back to school at 43 to study this. So look, I don't believe in putting age limits or caps on things, but let's take a look back at our childhood because I think there's a lesson to be learned there. How often, anyone who's listening who has children or they go back to their youth, they might remember that you probably had a closet full of uniforms. Mm-hmm. And these uniforms were for every after school and sports program that you participated in. And you did the fall in this and the winter in this and the spring in that. And maybe you continued a second year. Maybe you tried something new the second year. And you constantly had these uniforms because you kept trying things until something would stick.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't do that as adults.
Yeah.
We don't give ourselves the opportunity to try things. And we sort of get molded into this one area that you started in and you just continue down that path, even though it might not be serving you anymore and you might not be interested in it anymore and you might not even like it anymore.
Mm.
But you're so good at it
Yeah.
You can't imagine doing anything else, which is why I really say that just because you're good at something doesn't mean that you are intrinsically motivated to do it.
Yeah.
Big difference.
It's a massive difference. All right. So that's attribute number one.
Yes.
Attribute number two.
So number two, you've heard about grit and resilience and a strong work ethic, and that's all true. 100% you need that. But that's not a goal. That's a baseline.
Yep.
The difference is really how you pursue challenges. So the high achievers have a very distinct focus. For them, it's not a question of if they will overcome the challenge. The question is how. And they ask themselves, what is the strategy I haven't thought of yet? And I'll give you a perfect example. One of the people who I interviewed was a biochemist by the name of Dr. Peggy Whitson. She worked at NASA as a biochemist. Not everyone who works at NASA is an astronaut. Most people don't know that. But she wanted to be an astronaut. That was her goal. And she applied and was rejected. And she applied again and was rejected. And applied again and was rejected. Now, this kept happening over and over and over again for 10 years. Most people I know would not apply for the same job for a decade. Yep. But I asked her, I said, Peggy, why did you apply for the same job over and over again? She said the question was not if I was going to become an astronaut.
Yeah.
The question was how.
Mm.
What is the gap between what they're looking for and what I've shown them? And how can I work to fill that gap?
Mm.
And once she figured that out, she started to close the gap. And you know what happened? She got accepted. She became an astronaut, but that's not all. She spent more days in space than any American astronaut. She became the first female commander of the International Space Station, a role she held twice. And ultimately, she went on to become NASA's chief astronaut. Imagine if she would have quit after that first rejection.
So much about that speaks to me. And I'll look, on a personal note, I'm former Army, and as an infantry soldier, my ambition was to fly. I applied. There were only three times you could apply, and on the third time, I made it.
Yay!
But it was one of those things that the first time, because I'm almost 6 foot five. Very difficult to tell on this screen, obviously. And when we were going through this process, I thought height was the problem, but that was not the problem. It was other skills and attributes, and so I just worked as hard as possible to get there. And I was completely surprised when they said, "Congratulations!" I thought that was never going to happen. So I hear you completely on that attribute.
Love it, love it.
All right, attribute number three, and we're going through this because there is an approach that I want to sort of talk with you about how this plays into then how people collaborate. And then partner, because there is a natural magnetism, it feels to me, when people hold these attributes and they practice them, that people want to be around them. They want to do things together and create new things together.
Yes.
And it's so easy to collaborate with these people when you get to that point.
Yes.
If you're one of those people. But there's an ambition, I think, for others to want to try and be like that. But they're sort of struggling to work out if they're... worthy is the wrong way to say it, but sort of have all the things that they need to sort of partner properly. So attribute number three.
Number three is having that super strong foundation where you're never resting on your laurels. In fact, you strengthen that foundation each and every day.
Mm.
So an example, one of the people who I interviewed for your American listeners was Bonnie Blair. Bonnie Blair was a long track speed skater. Now, at that time when she was competing in the Winter Olympics, her main competitors were what were then the East Germans. Now, you know, they all go in the Olympic Village to the gym together, and she saw their thighs and she said, "Ruth, they were like tree trunks." She said, "I was never going to have their power." And she said, "I didn't have the power, but I was going to beat them on skill." And she went back to her original long track speed skating coach to refine and perfect those skills, and did them over and over and over again, even though they were already embedded in her muscle memory. Make it better, make it better, make it better, make it better. Ultimately, she beat the East Germans and she won and became an Olympic champion.
Yeah. It is in the small areas where I think people can see a focus and see a path through,
yeah,
that there is huge leveling up that they can do to make that work. And there is no doubt about that. And I think it's in the small, boring things that might otherwise pass you by.
100%.
Right? Super fascinating. All right, attribute number four.
Number four. Now, this one is the one that surprised me the most.
Okay.
Now, you heard of Mark Cuban, mm-hmm. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett. They all notoriously are known to read 3 to 8 hours a day. They read anything they can get their hands on. But it's not reading that made them billionaires. It's opening their mind up to new knowledge. Mm. And then starting to make connections between two points that other people don't yet see.
Yeah.
So while they're reading 3 to 8 hours a day, that is, because I said that is not what made them billionaires, we can also start doing that by opening our minds up to new ideas. So what are ways to do that? Sure, you can read books, you can read articles, you can watch webinars, you can take LinkedIn learning courses. I have a bunch on there that people watch. You can listen to podcasts. You can also have conversations with people. And that's where mentorship plays such a strong role. All of these high achievers surrounded themselves with a team of mentors. And that's why that led to my latest book, Financial Times Guide to Mentoring. Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep in mind. It's not the reading 3 to 8 hours a day. That is not for everyone. If you work full time and have a commute and have little kids, you're not reading 3 hours a day, right?
Nope.
But there are other ways that you can open your mind up to new knowledge, for sure.